Hey, what's going on? Welcome to The Doug Show. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about working solo and having a team, maybe a smaller team versus a bigger team, but we're going to get to that after sort of a longer intro section. So one thing, the solo team, small team, big team thing, that is a rebroadcast. It will be a rebroadcast from my now canceled other podcast called Ranking Revolution. I think it was a fine podcast, but there's a whole other story behind that. So that's where that core piece of this episode is going to come from. However, I have new ideas for today. I'm actually just recording this about a week before the episode goes live. And one reason why I'm recording it kind of at the last minute, this is a little bit at the last minute, is because I've been out of town for a long weekend, kind of a random long weekend. So we decided, due to colds and some other stuff, my wife and I decided that we were just going to kind of stick around Longmont for the New Year timeframe. And in the past, we've often gone to somewhere in the mountains or just kind of gone on a little vacation. So we waited a little bit this time and we went to Estes Park, which isn't too far away, but that is considered the gateway to the Rocky Mountain National Park, which we enjoy very much. And it's right in winter. So there's actually a lot of snow up there compared to here in the Front Range. There hasn't been too much snow in the last month or so, hardly anywhere, like not here in Longmont. And then in Estes Park, there really wasn't that much either. So anyway, you are close to the park there, so you're able to go on some hikes. And instead of taking an hour to an hour and a half to get to your trailhead, if you're in Estes Park, you can get right into Rocky Mountain National Park within 10 minutes and get to your trailhead in another, you know, 15, 20 minutes, depending on where it's at. So anyway, we went out there. We just got back. So it was like kind of a long weekend. We checked it out. One really cool thing is there were still Christmas decorations all through the town. And it had that sort of small town Christmassy vibe like you might see in a Hallmark movie, which I love. And I'm probably going to do a little episode or some segment about Hallmark movies in the near future. Of course, we're just past the holiday season, but I heard Cal Newport on his podcast talk about Hallmark movies. And I was shocked that I missed some of the topic area that we could cover on this show or even Mile High Fi, my other podcast, and it'll make sense. All kind of bringing it together here, I can record this at the last minute because I have a small team and I have one assistant, Callie, who's awesome. Thanks. You're probably going to listen to and or watch this. Well, I know you will. And because I have a small team, and I've actually like reduced some of the obligations that I have, and in turn, the obligations that Callie would have for like extra work. So the expectations are she has a handful of, you know, few hours per week or so. And I've actually trimmed that down because I'm doing less. So in turn, she is doing less as well. And overall, the point here is I have a small team and just a few extra hours that Callie helps me with. And that's it. No one else is relying on me for stuff. So if I want to go on a last minute trip or just get the fuck out of the office because it's nice outside and go for a hike, I can do it. And I've literally gone on more hikes in the last couple of weeks, just in the middle of the week. And it's been great. And then we were able to go to Estes Park and enjoy the holiday season post New Year's. So it was very quiet and not too many people down there. Some restaurants are open. We don't eat out a ton and we probably eat out, you know, couple times on a vacation like that. And otherwise I cook at home and, you know, bring stuff to cook at the Airbnb and that's all great. But, you know, we don't need like there to be like a ton of people in town and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of the perfect window. And I suspect they're probably going to take down those Christmas decorations in the next, you know, week or so. I'm not sure. I don't know when they take it down. But anyway, it was really cool. And the whole point of this is because I have a small team and very specific obligations, it's easy for me to be really flexible. And I'm not responsible for like a whole production team. Like, let's say, for example, I had a higher level production value and put more time and effort into research, more effort into maybe like guests as far as like getting other guests into an episode like this and talk about their team or whatever, like an NPR style where maybe there's several people involved versus what we have. And a lot of times is either a straight up interview, so goes pretty straightforward, or just me talking just like this, which is pretty easy to produce. And if you actually look back, longtime listeners will know that in the very beginning, I sometimes would record the episode like the day before. So it ended up being a little bit more raw and less production value. But the point is, if I had a team of say like three or four people and they needed 30 hours a week to work on stuff, I have to have like a pretty big backlog of stuff and or be extremely productive to give the team stuff to do. Or you're just paying people for not doing any work. And that is a spot where I don't want to be in. And I've heard, you know, some of my peers, maybe they run an agency, maybe they have several writers or contractors doing various things for their podcast or their YouTube channel or their website. Back in the day, there's not much work going on websites now, but basically they had to give their team a bunch of stuff to do, or they were just like flushing money down the toilet. And the thing is, it's not just the freelancer and employee that's relying on you, it's their whole family too. So that becomes a much bigger deal. So you know, you really don't want to just all of a sudden just close up shop and say, hey, there's nothing left, especially if you've, developed a relationship with the employee or the freelancer, and you've trained them and you've worked with them and you know them personally and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, having a small team helps me be very flexible. And it also, you know, reminded me, I am consuming some kind. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I watch YouTube videos and I see some of the side hustles that my friends are working on. I'm on some other email lists too. And some people are still working on websites a little bit. Shout out to Gaz on YouTube, who frequently checks out. Hopefully he will listen to this podcast, but he's on live streams often. And he is going against the grain here, against the current of the stream of people not working on websites. He was saying like his site's been growing, it's been doing better. And he was like, maybe it's never a better time to work on a website since there is much less competition and people are not working on it. Now, I know I wouldn't go that far. I question the motivation to do that. But overall, Gaz is there working on the site and he's able to make it work. And I am just blown away. But I lost my train of thought here. I've talked myself into a freaking circle. But I remember now. This is harkening back to the old days of the podcast where I would talk myself into a circle, not know how I was going to end the story, and then just kind of ramble on into something else. And I think I even remember sometimes I never even came back to the point and people would email me and tell me what I was talking about and then stopped. I did remember. So I am searching for other topic areas to cover. And I'm searching for like what this show should be. And I'm not stressing out about it too much. The good part is I'll probably be able to just interview people. And that's good. And then I have my own take on random stuff. It's called The Doug Show, so I could talk about whatever. I mean, I did it that way intentionally from the very beginning, knowing that I may move away from niche sites. So people that listen to the show or watch on YouTube, you are interested in side hustles and working online and earning money and maybe even offline projects, just some kind of side hustle. I mean, that's the core. There's a handful of you, actually probably a higher percentage than I realized, that are operating at a high level where maybe you run an agency or you have a SaaS and you do have a team and you are running something and you're not trying to do something on the side. You already have your thing going, or maybe you dabble just a little bit. But what this whole point is, and then I'll kick it to myself for the Ranking Revolution podcast portion of it, talking about solo teams, that's just you, and then bigger teams and growing and the pros and cons. But basically, when I think about the people that are successful, it's people that are able to pivot and be flexible when things change. And things changed like throughout the roughly 10 years I was working on niche sites or so. And I had to adapt and figure it out. And many, you know, hundreds, dozens of other people, like you all did that too. And the thing is, you just don't want to make a bet and gamble so that you can't keep playing and trying. So if you're flexible and you're able to pivot and focus, it's an interesting balance of like trying a few different things and focusing hard at the same time and making sure that like you actually finish your projects, you finish the things that you are starting, so you don't end up with like four websites that are like halfway done, or several YouTube channels that are like partially started, but you never made much progress in one specific area. And I think that is one or two things that I have been able to do really well. Like I'm good at sort of long-term projects, and I'm good at adapting, and I'm also good at finishing them. And then, I mean, similar to Ranking Revolution, right? When I got to a certain point, I realized, hey, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. I'm not putting in as much effort as I thought I was going to. I'm not nearly as interested or enthusiastic as I thought I would be either. And whenever I look at projects, successful small businesses that I launched, basically things worked out pretty quickly, like better than I expected, almost right away. Of course, you do have to put in effort. Sometimes like it takes a while to, you know, you put in the effort for a specific thing and, you know, you have to build up sort of the compound returns over time. Maybe you need to publish, you know, several dozen podcast episodes or several dozen blog posts, or put in your time, however it is, for whatever medium it is. And if you do put in your time, then it should pay off. But there's some stuff, you know, like I said, now I wouldn't recommend people start a blog and publish written content for a side hustle. If you want to do it for fun, that's one thing. If you want to get your thoughts out, that's one thing. But if you're trying to do it as a side hustle, potentially to take full time, blogging is not the thing. I mean, there was a time where it was like, yeah, you need to put in, you know, 2 months of consistent publishing and then it's going to take off. And then it was 6 months. And then it was like, well, you need to put in about a year and a half or 2 years and publish every week, multiple times a week. And I mean, that's a long time to focus on something and not see any like uptick or growth or anything like that. So all that to say, I'm not sure where I would specifically focus personally, but after talking to some of the folks out there working on local newsletters, that seems like it would marry pretty well to the skill set that I have and to the skill set that a lot of people have from working on blogs and stuff like that. I think there were a lot of people that started blogs and you were like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't know what to write in a blog post. I was a little nervous to publish something, thinking it would be judged, but it turns out I would be so lucky if someone found my blog and landed on it and had an opinion, even if it was a negative opinion. I mean, that's how almost any of these sort of content creator situations end up being. Like, you're nervous that you're not worthy to produce content on that platform, but it turns out if you do and you do a bad job, it doesn't really matter that much. And you would be so lucky if someone actually finds the stuff that you're producing, because there's a huge flood of things out there. So to summarize, I think you need to be flexible and don't put yourself in a situation where you can't keep trying. And the cool part, like with the side hustle stuff, is usually, you know, you have a full-time job or something. And then you're working on these side hustles. So you're able to focus some time, maybe a little other capital into it, and then grow it up. But if it doesn't work, it's okay. Like you didn't bet the farm on it. Maybe you shut down a specific side hustle and then you pick something else up in the future. So hopefully that's a little bit helpful. I will probably be doing more interviews with SaaS founders and hearing about that. There were a few people that asked about it. And I mean, really throughout this podcast, I have been talking to those people, whether it's someone who has a WordPress theme or someone who has a WordPress plugin, or like Jesse Lakes with Genius Link. So other tools that help affiliate marketers, place links in an efficient way. So there's a lot of different SaaS founders. I recently talked to Zach Welchel from My Budget Coach. I'm going to be talking to a couple other people coming up. So I could definitely see that being, you know, one of the segments. And shockingly, I mean, I think I even said this way back in other times where, I mean, with my background as a software project manager, it's very surprising that I did not launch any sort of SaaS the whole time. Definitely some ideas along the way, but I think because I was in the industry, I was like, I don't really want to do that anymore, even though it probably would have potentially could have been one of the most lucrative things that I did. Obviously tough to grow things, but I had a platform to share it out. Shocking that I never started a SaaS. But the cool thing was with those type of things, especially like how I would treat it now, I would create the software in the whole company and entity in a way that was easy to transfer it to a new owner, where I just build it to sell it, because at some point I know it wouldn't be as interesting to me. But overall, I was just like, I don't want to do software. So let's hear from myself over on Ranking Revolution. If you do want to check out that show or want to buy it, I think there's 48 episodes. It's a cool URL. I mean, from where I sit, I feel like SEO is going to be less important moving forward. And I imagine a lot of people disagree with that. But I can tell you, for me, it'll be less important because I don't care as much about it anymore. But the thing is, I've seen other folks sort of challenge it and say, of course it's going to be relevant. But, you know, we look at, well, I'm not reading the firsthand stuff, I'll be honest with you. I see people referenced on a newsletter. I see people referenced on a newsletter and it's just like their tweets that they put out. So it's like, I'm getting this third hand and it's kind of interesting. I don't have a strong opinion, but I mean, basically it's people that are in the industry, SEO agencies or experts or anything like that, where, I mean, their job relies on them believing that SEO is going to be as relevant as it was before. And my job does not rely on that. So I'm looking at it and I'm like, I mean, there could be some scenarios where SEO, this is probably very controversial that I'm going to drop this in and then leave, but maybe it's a topic area. So if you have an opinion, shoot me an email, feedback@doug.show. But yeah, if their fucking job relies on them believing that SEO is really important. There's a famous quote, I forget who it is. It's probably Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett. Yeah, I mean, of course, an insurance agent is going to say, yeah, the best solution for nearly anything is a whole life policy. And it turns out it's hardly a good solution for anything. So we'll see how all that turns out. All right, let's hear from Ranking Revolution and teams versus working solo, small teams versus big teams. I talk about the pros and cons of all those. So with that, I will leave it and catch you on the next episode, which should be really awesome. I'm not sure what it'll be yet, but I'm sure it'll be very amazing. Welcome to the Ranking Revolution podcast, your go-to source for strategies and ideas for SEO, organic growth, content creation, and online business. I'm Doug Cunnington, your host. In this episode, we'll explore the pros and cons of flying solo, working with a small team, and scaling up to a larger team. I've personally navigated all three of these scenarios, and I'll share some of my thoughts and experience, really just the pros and cons for each one of those. We're going to start with solo and work our way up to larger teams. And most of us start our entrepreneurial journey alone. So there are some significant advantages for working solo. And I'll preface and say, I have a strong bias to smaller teams, really solo plus a couple of virtual assistants. There's a little bit of a blend and I'll get into some of those details. But number one, if you are solo, you have freedom. You have complete freedom to make the decisions. You could pivot really quickly without needing to consult anyone else. Me personally, I love that. I am not necessarily a control freak, in air quotes, but I like to operate alone and I don't like to answer to anyone. So it kind of makes me well-suited for entrepreneurship. Number two, it's really fast to implement projects because you can just think of an idea. Maybe you get an idea from a podcast or a YouTube video, and then you can get into it. You could plan it really fast and you don't have to get approvals. There's no lengthy discussions or negotiations otherwise. Number three, as far as pros, it is generally cheaper to work alone. You don't have to worry about payroll, other admin expenses, benefits, office space for employees if you happen to have a brick and mortar type situation. The thing is, you can't ignore the time. Time is a very valuable resource, but on a nuts and bolts, like actual money situation and cash flow, you can work for, in air quotes, free. It does take your time, but if you're looking to earn some money on the side or you're just trying to like test some things, it is generally cheaper than hiring even freelancers. Next is just being agile. So this is sort of related to fast implement projects, but if you're solo, you can adjust your strategies and operations and change your mind about how you are going to implement something or do some piece of work. And last one that I'll mention here is, even if you're operating solo, it doesn't mean you can't hire people, right? You could hire freelancers on many different platforms out there. The flexibility that you have for growing a team with specialists is huge. You could kind of always do this, but it's much easier to find the right people with all the different marketplaces for freelancers out there. Of course, it's not all perfect. It's not sunshine and roses out there. So there are cons to working solo. If you're truly solo, then you're doing all the work. You can get overwhelmed. You can get burnt out. And that is obviously a problem. Again, you can hire some people as freelancers to do one-off things. But generally, if you're solo, you are doing a great deal of the work. Second con is it's going to be harder to sell. So if you are thinking, hey, I want to start a business and I want to eventually sell it, or I want to have the option to sell it, if you are operating solo, it's a little bit harder to sell because if someone wants to buy your business, they have to like transition it all over. If you have a team, they are doing the work, there's roles and responsibilities, and there can be some continuity to the situation. You could sell the company, you could sell the operations, including working with that team and maybe all the roles and responsibilities. So that's much easier to sell. Number three is you have lower leverage. So when you are negotiating deals, perhaps you don't have as much scale if you're just one person. Further, you don't have the leverage on your time. So if you have a larger team, you're able to outsource some of the activities. Maybe you're the visionary, you are directing the work, and you can get a lot more done with a smaller amount of your time. So I think probably the most, there's a few ways you are leveraged, and the lack of leverage for your time is a big con for a solo operator. Next is the freelancers might be a little flaky. So you can scale easily with freelancers, but if they don't have enough work from you, if they have too much work from you, if a situation changes on their end, they may go and find some other work or just stop working with you altogether. This isn't necessarily common. It might be something that you run into more often, but it just depends on how you work and the way you hire people And that's a whole other story, but freelancers are free to come and go as they please, just like you can hire them for one project and then not hire them again. Another couple cons with a solo operation with a couple freelancers, you don't really have team culture. So if you're hiring a couple freelancers, again, they may come and go and you don't really get that team culture. Next, and the last one we'll mention here, generally, you just can't get as much done. So this is back to the leverage, but if you are operating by yourself, you can't get as much done as a bigger team. There's no way around that. Even if you're ultra productive, there's some limit of what you can actually get done. Again, you can't pick up some freelancers, but then you're getting into small teams, which is the next thing we're getting into. So small teams, there's a bit of an overlap. Like I said, I prefer a smaller team. And technically I have, you know, 1 to 2 virtual assistants that work with me. I've had more in the past. I've actually had quite large teams. I think probably close to 20 or so virtual assistants, all working a few hours a week. And I believe I heard Tim Ferriss on one of his podcasts, many of his podcasts, referencing how he likes small teams for a lot of the reasons we went over. And that made sense to me. One personal note is I actually worked on larger teams and helped grow larger teams in my corporate career. So I learned on the job, which was great. I had good mentors and a framework to grow the teams. And I had autonomy. So I kind of had the best scenario to learn how to grow teams, the pros and cons. I made mistakes with a safety net and I was paid well to do it. So I've had big teams and I just don't prefer them. And we'll get into some of those details. The piece that I want to highlight here is a small team with 1 to 2 virtual assistants, kind of solo, versus a small team with like full-time employees. There's, of course, a distinction, but there's a lot of commonality between the two of them. So let's get into the pros of a small team. It's still pretty lean. It's still pretty agile. I'm not going to belabor those. So you still have a lot of the pros of operating solo, especially with a team, say under 5 people or so, especially when you are the president, the CEO, the overall decision maker, you still have a lot of those advantages. Moving on, you can have permanent team members in this sort of situation, and that means you can have a bit of a team culture, which helps with collaboration and loyalty and being able to work with a team on a long-term basis. It's very helpful, and you'll get additional efficiency and effectiveness with the team when you are working together and have a common goal, and you're more of a team. Next is having an actual team, especially full-time employees, might be more reliable, especially when you compare it to freelancers. So freelancers might have some change external to you or the working relationship, and the freelancer might just move on. Last thing to note here, it's easier to sell a team with your business because there's structure in place and it's not reliant on just one person. Now, I said it was the last thing. The obvious one is with more people, you can get more shit done. So you can get more work done because you have more people working on it. There are challenges, of course. And number one, you have the additional responsibility of giving the team work. You have to give them the tasks. And that can be a little bit more time consuming. It can be a little bit more stressful. And another directly related con is the communication channels are more complex. So depending on the size of the team, it might not be a big deal. If you have, you know, 3 or 4 other people working with you, you can have a sort of direct communications. But when you get over around 6 people or so reporting to you directly, it can be very complicated to have efficient communication channels. And if you don't have it locked down, you can be overwhelmed with all the back and forth communication. Plus, there's communication going on that doesn't go through you. So the team members are communicating with each other. And that potentially can lead to misunderstandings, more complexity, and some maybe small office politics. Really having a small team is quite adaptable. It's kind of a great spot depending on the kind of work that you're trying to do. But what you might find is if you're scaling up, maybe you have your sights set on building a larger agency, for example, and you just need to have a bigger team that can execute the work for you. So let's talk about the large teams and scaling up and how really it can unlock new opportunities, especially when you're sort of at the maximum amount of work that your team can do, but it brings a lot of complexity and for me, a lot of stress personally. So big teams, we'll define it as say like 15 or more people, something like that, but it can be individual to you, right? For some people, if you've been operating solo for a while, if you have a team of like 10 or 11, that might actually feel large. So this is kind of a fluid number here and you could take it, you know, however it is to you specifically. So number one, big pro, with a larger team, you can do more work. You could tackle bigger projects. You could take on more clients. You could scale in a way that is just not possible with a small team. Number two, you can be the CEO or the president. You can get out of the delivery. You can get out of the day-to-day business and you can focus on high-level strategy. You can look at the sort of vision of where you want to be and where your company needs to be in a few years. And you could just work, you know, on the business, not in the business, as one of those cliches goes. Number three, it's easier to sell. So again, if you have a well-structured team, roles and responsibilities, and the CEO can be interchanged with someone else, i.e. the new owner, it's easier to sell. The company can run without you, basically. And you hear these anecdotes occasionally where the company runs better when you go on vacation and get out of the way. And that's a very interesting concept, which is beyond the scope of what we're talking about today. Next, with a big team, it's easier to delegate. So there will be specific roles and responsibilities. If you have a larger team, there should be a management team in place. With that management team, you don't have to work with the 20 or 30 people that are doing the work directly. You can work with your five managers that each own a certain piece. You could divide the org chart however you want, but it's much easier to delegate because you could turn it over to a manager and then the manager can work directly with the team members. With a team that's that large, you can have a company culture. I'm not big on the old mission statements, but bigger companies love that shit. And it can actually boost morale. It could unify the team. And again, similar to the small teams, you're all actually like working together for a common goal and you have a common vision and everyone can work together a little bit better. And I'm going to emphasize, you could just get so much more work done with a larger team. And it's great from a leverage perspective, again, because you're able to talk to your handful of managers or your management team, and then you're not directly working with every single person in your team. Next, let's get to the cons here. So because it's larger, because you have to work through the management team, it's a little bit slower to implement projects. You have to slow down the decision-making. You have to slow down the project implementation. You have to work through the layers of communication. You don't necessarily have to get approvals if you're the sole president or CEO of the team, but you have to work with your management team. So you can't just execute something and get started right away. It goes a little bit slower, even if there's not a bureaucracy in place, which hopefully there's not too much bureaucracy. I mean, you're building your own team, so you're really in control of that. Next, with the additional team members and the additional org chart complexity and layers, you have more complicated communication channels. And I mention this all the time because I think people underestimate how the communication channels can really impact the delivery it can impact the morale of the team, and it can lead to misunderstandings, it can lead to delays. And if you don't give the communication complexity enough attention, it can lead to mistakes and frustration. So most of the time, you will make these mistakes and then you will figure out that you need to approach it a little bit differently and maybe include the management team when you're making decisions, make sure you get their input. Maybe they go to the team members to get the team member input as well. It can get very complicated fast. And when you have the team communicating with each other, again, there's opportunity for misunderstandings, which can be, really detrimental to the project delivery. So last one, maybe the biggest one for me, as far as the cons go, there's more responsibility. So instead of one or two people maybe relying on you for their paycheck and supporting their family, now you have like 20 people or 30 people. So that means you have more responsibility. For me, that means more stress. And you also have to consider like dealing with HR issues and other misunderstandings. And you just end up with a whole, in air quotes, culture. For good or for bad, you have to think about morale and keeping people around and making sure the career path lines up for what they want to do, what your team members want to do, and how your business will be growing in the future or staying the same size. But you have to think about all of that. And for me, that's a lot of stress. So some people love it. Some people like to have that responsibility. But for me, I'm not super into it, at least at this point in time. I haven't been for a while. So there's pros and cons for each one of these, solo, small teams, large teams, very large teams. And here's a couple main takeaways. You will probably start working solo, probably on the side. And you can decide at each stage if you want to grow the team. And this could be a large team, a small team, of course, a large team and a small team. There's a little bit of overlap. It really depends on how you personally define it. And I think if you went deeper, you read some management books, you'll run across like actual definitions of the size. But the thing is, like with a larger team, you have more leverage. It's easier to get a lot of work done. The other thing is when you go through and you grow, say 6 people versus 18 or 24 or 30, you have a different relative scales of complexity. And I've heard each time you triple the team size, you have new challenges. And I'm going to make some rounding here, but basically like when you have 1 person to 3 and then 3 to 10, and then 10 to 30, 30 to 100, then 300, you're going to hit other issues. You're going to hit some breaking point for the way you're doing communication or breaking point for the way you're organizing projects. And you're going to have to figure out how to solve those problems. You're going to have other challenges along the way that don't adhere to the rule of 3X as the team sizes grow, but it's something to keep in mind. So if you hit some point and you think, well, we grew from 10 up to 30 and everything was fine when we were 25 people, but when we hit 30, something kind of broke. Don't be surprised. This is something that does happen. And I suspect if you study some management texts out there, you would find, hey, a lot of times when you hit 30 people, X happens. When you hit 100 people, you need to do this thing because it's highly likely that you're going to run into this problem. So, with that said, that's my view on team sizes. And at this point in time in my career, in my ambition level, a solo, a very small team works for me. So solo with 1 or 2 assistants here and there, that's what I like. If you enjoy the show, please leave a review. It really helps people have the confidence to download some episodes and check it out. And if you have any suggestions for these solo episodes, for example, or if you want to hear me interview someone, let me know. You can shoot me an email and we'll catch you on the next episode.